Welcome to Mysterious Goings On, the podcast about creativity, writing, and mystery. Every week, we talk about all kinds of great fiction and meet the people who write it. We also feature explorations about creativity in all walks of life. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will join you right after this.
Why do authors love mysterious goings-on? Let me count the ways, but here's a great one from author Linda Stuart Henley, author of Kate's War.
Well, thank you, Alex. I enjoyed the conversation, and I appreciated the fact that you were able to say all the right things, so I didn't have to say them myself, like repeatedly say, please read Kate's War. I didn't want to do that. That's not for me to say, but you could say it better, and you did. And thank you so very much.
Welcome back, folks. Today, we have the privilege of speaking with Daniel Duliznesky, whose career spans more than two decades of dedicated service to the U.S. Secret Service. Daniel's journey took him from the role of a K-9 technician working alongside his dog, Korak, I believe that's how you pronounce it, to a pivotal position within the Pinellas County, Florida School System's emergency management structure. Here he played a crucial role in safeguarding more than 100,000 students across 140 schools. Daniel's transition from national security to the heart of our education system provides him with a unique perspective on the critical issue of school safety, a topic of paramount importance to educators, parents like me, and of course, students alike. He is the author of The First 5 Minutes, A Guide to Locking Down Effectively. You know what? I want to learn so much more about this. So how about I stop talking and we start meeting Daniel Duliznesky. Daniel, welcome to the show. And thank you so much for being here.
Alex, thank you for so much. Important subject, hard to talk about sometimes, but yes, I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it is my pleasure. This is something as we've talked offline about. I think it's on every parent's mind, unfortunately, today. My gosh, not to be morbid, but there are, sometimes I when I hug my daughter goodbye before she goes to school, that thought crosses my mind. Is this the last time I'm ever going to see her? Is something going to happen to her at school? And that's why when your people got a hold of me about you coming on, I was like, I want to talk to this gentleman about this. Daniel, do me a favor, if you would, tell our audience your theory of the case about security with school shooting situations and those kind of things right now across the country.
Well, the one thing that you mentioned about parents, and when I first started off with this, I was talking to teachers and administrators. And even though they would agree with me, because a lot of this stuff is common sense, they were like, look, our hands are tied. I don't want to lose my job because the Board of Education is telling me, or my school board is telling me, my superintendent principal are telling me. So I kind of switched over and said, look, it's got to be parents. It's got to come from parents to talk about this. And yet I've done a lot of these podcasts where the parents are like, you know, old school, like, oh, I drop them off. They're good. I got things to do. I got my job. I got all these things to do. Obviously, it's a subject once something happens. And we all know when the media focuses on a shooting that happens with so many, it has to be so many lives where you really, the red flags go up. Yeah. That's when parents will say, oh my gosh, I need to concentrate more on this. And I don't want to panic anybody because obviously it is like being struck by lightning. You can say, well, it's been said where people come out, oh, it'll never happen here. Never happen here. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm tired of that thing where you say never happen here. As long as you're prepared, if you're prepared, you're doing the drills correctly, you have SROs, you just do the outer surface of your school, the security, and then go to the inner, you're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. There are crazy people out there. I can tell you that. And more likely than not, what's been happening is the amount of weapons that have been discovered in schools. Not so much a shooter going in that the media focuses on. It's the amount of weapons, guns, knives that come into school. And a lot of that, and it, again, it's not my lane, Alex, but a lot of that has to do with the social media, with the mental health. And a lot of these kids are bullied. Yeah. They're tired of it. I'm going to take care of this. It's more targeting where they bring a gun into school to protect themselves. I'm tired of being bullied. I'm going to take care of this. Not that they want this mass shooting where they're going to kill everybody. They want protection. They're afraid. The social media just builds up on this, and it builds and builds and builds. So finally, they get tired of it. So the majority of what's been happening is that more weapons are showing up in schools. Now, with that being said, a lot of parents will say, oh, well, then we need metal detectors. Stay away from that. Stay away from the technology that really doesn't do much of anything. Look, metal detectors are nothing like we call, Alex, or just security theater. They look good. Technically, are they going to stop anybody? Maybe. They might. I mean, if we want to look, I don't want to blame TSA, but how many weapons to get through there when they go through? I mean, come on. You're slowing down the process. If a kid wants to get a weapon into school, they're going to get the weapon into school, just like they know where all the cameras are, all the hiding places. These kids aren't stupid. They're going to get a weapon into school. So not that I want to concentrate on that, but to stay away from this fear that, oh my gosh, we could be involved in some kind of school shooting. The main thing of my book and why the reason I wrote the book was I just want people prepared. If you're prepared, if you have the confidence that if something happens, let's say there is an incident at the school, it could be a school shooter, it could be some other emergency, you know what to do. I know when to go into a lockdown. The classroom doors should already be locked during school time. Now, I get pushback on that because teachers will say, oh my gosh, these kids come in and out. They want to go to the bathroom. They want to get a pass and this and that. Tough. Lock that classroom door during school time. You're one step ahead of the process. Turn the lights off, close the blinds. You sit on the floor quietly. You silence your phones. You don't open that door for anybody. You do not listen to any announcements. The good guys are coming and they're going to take care of the situation. So that's the main thing that I want to talk about is the preparation. When you go into a lockdown, you know what to do. You have the confidence, no reason to panic. This is the best area that you can concentrate on. Now, what's happening, Alex, is that a lot of schools fall into this, well, I want to say this grant issue. I've got money for this. Where am I going to put the money? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I'll put the money in technology. Maybe I'll get some cameras. Maybe I'll get metal detectors. Oh, wait a minute. I heard about this marketing company called ALICE.
Yeah.
And ALICE is an acronym for alert, lockdown, inform, counter, evacuate. And they throw all this publicity at you and we're going to take care of this. And the problem I've had, Alex, is that educators love it because instead of being passive, instead of what they call sitting ducks, which I completely disagree with, because no shooter has ever breached a locked door, ever. It's not going to happen. You're not going to shoot out a locked door. We'll stay away from that for a minute. This ALICE training, they will train someone for a couple days, and usually it's law enforcement, or it could be anybody, and that trainer will come and train the trainers. So that person will come into the school and give you this training, this ALICE training. And educators love it because now instead of being passive, you're more reactive. You're doing something, okay? So the first part of it's alert. Great, that's what you're supposed to do, alert. Mass communication, if something getting out there, PA system, we're in a lockdown, we got an active shooter, whatever. Second one is lockdown. Perfect. Again, which I completely agree, you should lock down. Now we get a little tricky. The third part is inform. You are supposed to have a designated person get on the PA system and inform the entire school where this gunman is and where they're going. Impossible. Unless you've got millions of dollars into your school, there is no technology out there now. Well, there's technology out there. You're not going to pay for it. That's going to follow someone through the school building. He's on the third floor. He's in room two, though. He's going here. He's going there. Not going to happen. Then we get to counter. So they use the word counter instead of fight because there's also run, hide, fight. We're not going to use counter. Well, in the counter part, not only do they get the teacher involved, they want to get the students involved. Okay. Everything from, now they'll say that we'll tweak this, but everything from elementary school up through high school. And what they're supposed to do, if that gunman ever gets inside the classroom, the teacher and the students are supposed to throw objects at the gunman precisely at the same time to distract them. I don't know. Pencils, AirPods, phones, whatever. Okay. Here's a metaphor. We're going to think about this. Let's say we take a child, I don't care what age they are, never shot a basketball before in their life. And you come in and hand them basketball and you've got an hour and a half to train them.
Yeah.
Go ahead and shoot that basket for an hour and a half.
Right.
Okay. Now you're done. Take the ball away. They don't touch that ball for 6 months. 6 months later, you bring them back. Here's the ball. Hit that basket precisely. Are you kidding me? This is what they're doing with students in schools, with throwing something precisely at a moment of sheer absolute panic. The worst experience they're ever going to have. You talk about fight or flight syndrome and throw something precisely at a gunman. No, no, I don't care. There are no mental health professionals, child development professionals. No one is endorsing this, saying this is a thing to do for children to do. I don't care what age you're at. If I'm a teacher in that school, I'm not having these kids do something like that. That is absolutely crazy. What happened to common sense? You get to the last part, which is evacuate. Okay, that's another thing that, you know, I disagree with. Now, if you know for sure, you are 100% sure as a teacher, because the onus is put on the teachers in this, Alex, that I see the gunman, I see where they are, we can get out of this classroom and run outside before that gunman sees us, before we get shot. Can you imagine the pressure, the liability, the absolute fear of a teacher to make that decision? Mm-hmm. Well, are we going to make that decision? Are you kidding me? To put the liability on the teacher? Okay, kid, 25, 30 kids. Okay, come on with me. We're going out here. And during the drills, they're walking. You're not going to be walking during the real thing. You're going to be in absolute panic to run out of that, to get to that exit. And guess what? Every other classroom's doing the same thing. You're going to pile up at the exit. Mm-hmm. So it's beyond me why educators love this. And I'll give examples. Sandy Hook, teacher confronted the individual, dead. Parkland, you had a gym teacher, confronted the individual, dead. Nashville, principal came out, tried to confront the individual, dead. Iowa, it has happened over and over again. And that's this Alice training. Part of this inform is to go out there and try to talk down this gunman. Alex, where were they 6 months ago when this person was having trouble? And in the threat assessment that you have in a school, you should have a threat assessment team and talk to this individual. The day of, they are beyond that, way beyond that. You are not going to go unarmed and talk to this individual and talk them down. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. Don't do that. And I'm sorry, it's cruel. These people aren't heroes. You're not a hero to go out there and present yourself, and then you're not going home to your family, your kids. You're not going home. So stop this. Stay in a lockdown. The good guys are coming. I point out Nashville is probably one of the best responses we've ever seen for police. And you also see that individual in the video going through, and they notice schools. That's another thing. Remember, Alex, every one of these shooters is either a former student or a current student. Yeah. They know what these schools look like, and they know where the vulnerabilities are. That individual in Nashville came in, locked door, move on, locked door, move on, open door, I'm in. Police got there. They did exactly what they were supposed to do, room to room. Where's the shooter? Went to him, boom, done. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So that's why I named the book 5 Minutes. The FBI data, and again, remember, FBI data builds up for a while, but so it's years behind.
Right.
The average shooter in a school is 3 to 5 minutes. So in those 3 to 5 minutes, teachers, students, you're alone. That's it. You're waiting for the good guys to come. No reason to panic. You're in a secure area. They're not going to shoot the lock out of the door. They're moving on to whatever free access they can get to. So I advocate for lockdowns. I do not advocate for options-based training, Alice, or run, hide, fight. They don't work. And we found out that right now, I've talked to an individual at Safe Havens International, one of the best research companies out there right now about school shootings. $130 million have been paid by schools for those type of trainings and those type of drills. So you stay away from it. If you're a parent, talk to your kids. What's going on? And I know teenagers, I have a teenager, 17 years old. You'll get maybe 30 seconds. If you get that, you're going to get yes or no answers. Pin them down very calmly. I understand, you know, you had an emergency response because schools should be telling parents when they have a drill.
Yeah.
What happened during the drill? Did you lock down? Did you run out? Were you told to throw something at a gunman? You hear stuff like that, that's when the red flag should go up. The options for parents are, number one, you contact the school. I don't care if it's email, phone call, whatever. If you get nowhere, now you got to go in front of the school board. I understand most of the time it's 3 minutes. You can get a page and a half pretty good in 3 minutes and tell them what's going on. I don't agree with this. Then if they still buck you, now you're on to the legislator. Now you're moving it up to your local people. So parents do have the power. So pay attention. Talk to your kids. Find out what's going on. Don't believe that what the school is doing is right. Ask your kids what's going on. And then from there, you do have the power to make changes.
Dan, wow. First of all, you clearly have this, you know, your evidence. There's plenty of evidence of your experience with this and the thought you put into this. Let me push back with the good guys are coming. They came in Uvalde and then they sat on their hands. And I know you could say, well, okay, that's one anecdote of one bad response. Because you could probably name 50 responses that were good, right? But there is that. As a parent, as a civilian, right? You see that and you're just like, there were like how many, 2 dozen, 3 dozen good guys just standing there. And these kids were being slaughtered. What about the school resource officer at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, who didn't have the nerve to go in? I got to ask you, Dan. What are we supposed to do here? Because you're telling us the good guys are coming. There's plenty of evidence that the good guys don't always get there in time.
You're right. I'm not going to deny that something like that can happen. Percentage-wise, something of that happened is very low. However, again, media focus, yes. And that's the reason I wrote my book was after Uvalde. I was so angry. I couldn't believe that happened. Even and when I was in the Secret Service, we had that kind of training. Because even if you're one person, you go. Even if one person, you go. So I can't say for, look, 99.9% of the time, you're going to have responses that are correct. You get these anomalies, it's stuff that's happening out there. Now, with that being said, we found in the past few years during the pandemic with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the defund police movement, do you have the right people in these positions? Now, I'm not going to go off on a tirade saying, look, are you getting the best people for these positions now? No, of course not. I mean, again, common sense. Why would anybody go to be a police officer? You don't get the backing of the administration. You're not going to get the backing of the press. You're not going to get the backing of anybody. So, and that's not to say what happened in Uvalde and Marjory Stoneman Douglas, but there's an excuse for that. There shouldn't be. You still go. That's your job. That I'm sorry. When you sign up, when I signed up, you go. I was there to protect the president. That's my job. You do it without thinking. So anyways, part of that, yes, is with what's been happening, that you don't get the best people now in these kind of positions, which is a horrible thing to say because I'm sorry. For me, my background, it's a noble profession. It is a noble profession. It is an honor that I served. I don't, I've got, you know, my kid and my wife has a son who's a police officer. And I said, I don't know if this is the right thing to do. I really don't, because I don't know if you're going to get the backing. So it's not a position now I would recommend anyone go into. You know, with that being said, yeah. I understand parents' concern. Is that person going to go? Is that SRO that we have that's trained for this and something, are they going to go? And I'm sorry, I don't really have an answer for that. I don't have an answer that, you know, they should go. That's what they're trained to do.
Right. And again, I'm not trying to, I don't mean this to be funny. I'm not trying to ambush you with that because to your point, you're going to find bad anomalous things on both sides of this question. You can pull out Uvalde just happens to be the most egregious.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
They should all just, I'm sorry, fire them all. They're horrible at their jobs. They just are. And it's hard to, my nephew is a SWAT captain. Okay. He's a sergeant. I know that he just has to grit his teeth when people mention that. I'm sure you feel the same way. It's like, please don't judge all of us based on these guys' total failure. But parents are going to say, I mean, you're a parent. I mean, if you take yourself out of your experience and you watch, I mean, you've seen the video, you've seen the minute by minute, right? And I'm just sitting there just going, sweet God, how are they not going in there? They're hearing these kids being slaughtered. But so in Uvalde, though, if we could use that example as a teachable thing here, were the doors of the classrooms no locks? Were they barricaded? Tell me about that.
Well, that, you know, there were things that happened beforehand on that. Apparently the security officer there disappeared. I still don't know the story behind that. There was a lock that was broken. There was a door that was wedged open. Apparently teacher had stepped out for a cigarette. The individual was in the parking lot, and it was like, wait a minute, how did they get from there into the building? And then apparently there was a communication breakdown, because I think part of those officers can explain that they thought it was a hostage situation. They thought this individual had hostages, which changes the whole dynamic of this thing. I mean, it happened at the nightclub also, where the individual shot whatever individuals had then was alive, and they thought they were holding hostages. And when they did go try to, you know, unlock the door, they were getting shot at. But again, it's what you sign up for. So they didn't have the intelligence. When I say intelligence, they didn't have the information.
Right, right.
What was happening inside that classroom, even though they were getting phone calls from the teacher and phone calls from the kids saying, help us, come in and save us. So it just was a complete breakdown of communications. I mean, how many, they had like 40 something officers there or something. What it took the Border Patrol guys and SWAT team to finally say, what the hell are you doing? Let's go.
Yeah.
So it was just, yes, it's an anomaly. It's going to be focused on. Yes, I'm sure it's going to be talked about. And yeah, parents that were there, and you've probably heard the latest report that they exonerated a lot of these officers, and those parents were pissed, and they should be. And I'm sure the civil suits are coming.
What about the parent who, pardon me for interrupting you, who said, screw you guys, and she went around a window.
And evacuate these kids. Yeah.
So that's, Dan, that's the problem, though, for you trying to convince people to shelter in place. Isn't that what this is called? Lock the door,
lockdown.
And be quiet. Lockdown. You're not there. Lockdown. Okay. Yeah. Lockdown. But so you have to combat that perception that I'm telling you about. And I know you're expecting, and any competent interviewer is going to bring that up to you when you talk about this. But okay, well, we've covered that part of it. And I appreciate your open-handed understanding of where I was coming from on that. I really do. Let me ask you something about this. And what I'm hearing you say is, look, you've got to go to the administration. They don't listen, go to the school board. They don't listen, keep escalating it.
Correct.
Parents listening to this show, and a lot of them probably will tell you, Dan, it takes forever to get anything done. Do I just tell my kid to disobey the teacher if something happens and hide? If the teacher says, let's go, and the kid's like, that's crazy. I mean, I know you're not that's specifically telling people to break the rules, but what do we do here?
No, I agree. That's a problem. You're going to have kids that have parents that are law enforcement, that have parents that are military, that have parents that are up on this thing going, look, if they say there is a gunman in your school, don't leave that classroom. And there may be times it hasn't happened. And I'm sure that there's people out there ready to do the research of when this happens, of if the teacher says, come on, 25, 30 kids, we're going. And you're going to have kids that are like, no, my dad, my mom said, stay here, stay in a lockdown. And especially, you know, the little kids, because look, no one knows how they're going to react in an emergency. No one knows how they're going to react. Even I don't know specifically how I would react. You know, I'd probably be, you know, reaching for a gun. You know, but you're going to have kids that freeze. Absolutely. I mean, lockout freeze.
Yeah.
You're going to have kids crying, screaming, panicking. You know, and yes, looking for direction from the teacher. So I hate this idea that this liability is put on the teacher to make this decision. That's why lockdown is so much easier, because it works. It's worked since Columbine. It's going to continue to work. But if it does come to a situation, and you know, the situation in Parkland was a little different because they had the fire alarm, to listen to the teacher. But look, Alex, I told my son, look, teacher says you to leave that classroom. You don't go anywhere. You're not leaving that classroom. There's no reason. I mean, you'd be like, why? You know, unless they specifically know. But when elementary school kids are going to listen. They're going to listen. But again, they're going to freeze. They're going to panic. They're going to be crying. Now, I still can't imagine if you as a teacher, if I'm a teacher in that classroom, you know, and I know for sure, I see them, they're out there, they're far enough away. Okay, we're close enough to the exit, we can get out. Am I the only one? Are there other classrooms going to do the same thing? Are we all going to pile up at the door? There's no, you know, communication that way. And there's not going to be any broadcast saying that. They're not going to come over the alphabet and say, hey, everybody, we're all going to evacuate. It's not going to happen. It's left to the individual teacher, which again, that liability is hard to put on a teacher. You didn't, as a teacher, you didn't sign up for this. You did not sign up for this. So
right.
It's one of the hardest jobs in the world now.
Daniel, then let me ask you this. This is not, I know what you're covering, but should we arm teachers then? By your logic, it sounds like they didn't sign up for that either.
Yeah. Well, again, Utah, parts of Texas have incorporated a program where they allow teachers that want to, not forcing anybody, that want to go through the type of training. And I advocate, at first I thought, man, this is a bad idea. Because if I'm a police officer coming in, I don't know who's a good guy or who's a bad guy.
Right.
How are they going to designate themselves? Throw on an orange vest, throw on something that says I'm a good guy.
Right.
I mean, I see somebody with a gun, I'm going to shoot him. I mean, I got a gun, you know, so right. I don't know how they're doing it in these states. I do agree, though, if you want to do it, to have the, basically almost the same type of training as a police officer, meaning you go through the training, you got to qualify with that weapon at least every quarter, at least.
Oh, wow.
Every 3 months, you go and qualify with that weapon and continue the training. And as a teacher, you don't get enough time to do your homework. You're going to have time now to do all this training.
Right.
So that's where it runs into it. But I tell you what. Down where I am, I have former law enforcement and former military people that want to do that. They're teachers, and they said, I should be allowed to do this. I want to keep my students protected. I want to keep myself protected. But then you get into the area of, all right, what are they going to do with the gun? Are they going to have it on them all the time? Are they going to have a locked box in their desk that they have to reach for? These kids are going to know where that gun is. If it's in the locked desk, they're going to know they're carrying it. What if you get into a fight? There's a lot of too much what ifs in that area. And I really, I don't know. You know, I always advocate that schools are not prisons. We don't want to make them prisons. But,
right.
You know, this is not something where we're going to, you know, snap our fingers or flip a white switch and we're done. We're safe.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Good. Not going to happen. So, as this AI technology starts to come in, maybe 30, 40 years from now, we'll be safe. But, you know, I've also got things from teachers saying, look, more than likely, they're not going to be human teachers much longer. You're going to have robots teaching these kids.
Wow.
You know, there won't be any reason for teachers. I got teachers saying that. They're saying, yeah, then pretty soon we're not going to have to deal with this, you know, because they're already dealing with discipline issues, the mental health issues, the phones, which are just drive me crazy.
Yeah.
And I, thankfully, I know recently, I mean, it's a little off topic here, but the U.S. United States finally is talking about some kind of restriction on having phones in classrooms.
Yeah.
In Europe, it's worked out very well. The grades have gone up. The kids' focus has gotten better. It should have been done here a long time ago because it's ruined these kids.
I happen to agree with you, and I think we should age gate all social media. These kids don't have any business being on Instagram when they're 12 years old. It's ridiculous. Let me ask you about a related topic then, Dan. And I want just your experience and thoughts on this. What about active shooter drills in school? I mean, because most of them are drilling on the thing you don't want them to do. But right. I know you're not a psychologist, okay? But there is some evidence that these are very traumatic things for the kids to go through, these drills. It's hurting them. Look, I'm from Oklahoma. When I grew up, you know what drill we had? Tornado drill, which was pretty scary. You go in the hallway, you cover up, and you... Right, yep. Right. Yeah, that was kind of scary. You know, I'm not saying it traumatized me, but the active shooter drills, your opinion, sir?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. They just had an article come out, what journal it was, not Journal of Violence. It was a peer-reviewed journal. And it was sixth graders up in upstate New York. And they did a survey. It was over 1,000 kids. And they went through the lockdown drills. And these were kids that were exposed to violence. Now, they didn't say specifically what type of violence. It could have been anything from bullying to, you know, shootings to things at home. But it was, targeted. But they used kids that were involved in some kind of violent, you know, happening. And they went through the lockdown drill. And afterwards, they talked to these kids. And they said, did you feel safer during this lockdown drill when you locked down? And the majority said yes. So the idea, and I'm talking about the normal lockdown drill. Classroom door is locked. You're sitting on the floor. You're waiting for the good guys to come. That was what they used in this. So they went through and they said, okay, now here's at least one study we have that shows that it does not traumatize these kids who have already been involved in some kind of violence. The lockdown drill made them feel safer. Now, my opinion, whenever I've gone to a school, and I concentrated more in elementary schools, because obviously that was the bulk of your school system. You have more elementary schools and less middle than less high schools. So I concentrate more on elementary schools. And I tell you, Alex, when they talk about traumatization, and these were kids, and sometimes we did them unannounced, and that was up to the principal. I didn't force it. I liked it. The principal said, I really want to see how my people react. Let's do an unannounced drill. Okay, let's find out. And you'd go in, and we were lucky because our elementary schools in the classrooms themselves, they had a bathroom or a shared bathroom. So they had double protection. So these teachers said, well, what the heck? Let's throw them in the bathroom. So they would. So they locked the door, put them in the bathroom. So we'd come in, and at the end of the drill, we'd unlock with the key. Where are they? Put 25 kids in that bathroom. I said, okay, you don't have to worry about that. And these kids would come out beaming that they did this great job. And we, everyone, administrator, teachers, told them, you guys get a gold star. You did a great job. These kids were beaming because they did this great thing. And we made sure to tell them they did this great thing. Whatever the teacher said, hide from the bad guy or whatever. You don't want to traumatize them in that way. But yeah, the type of drill is important. This idea of bringing in blanks and shooting off
guns, that's yeah.
And yelling and screaming and all that stuff. No. You don't need to do that. You don't want to traumatize somebody during the drill. Okay, you can go through and knock on the door, you know, and walk through, make sure the door is locked, try and make sure the door that it's locked. You can do stuff like that, but none of this shooting and yelling and screaming and all that, you know, why? You're not going to traumatize somebody during the drill. So now we're really getting to the point of, I want parents not only involved, but also informed. Make sure you tell, now you don't have to make it, if you want to be close to unannounced, let's do this. Let's say the principal will say, okay, parents and teachers, we're going to have an active shooter drill sometime during this week. All right. And we'll let you know as it gets closer, because I want to avoid, people are human, Alex. When you find out that there's a drill, look, teachers are, they're under pressure. Down here in Florida, we've got a grading system for each school. I mean, A through F. If you're a D or F school, you've got to get going. Otherwise, you're done. All right. So now I got a drill. Active shooter drills, hour and a half they're going to take. Okay. And it's teachers, oh my God, I got homework to do. I got these tests. I got this stuff coming. I want to get this thing over with. We're going to have a drill. Fine. I got the door locked. Lights are off. I'm going to close the blinds ahead of time. Sit, kids, sit on the floor. I want to get this over with. I understand. You do. You want to get it over with because you got to move on to other stuff.
Right.
But I really like to avoid that. I want them to be at least a little bit surprised, at least to the point of, okay, go through the motions, because I want that implicit memory. I want that muscle memory to turn the lights off, sit on the floor, those that go through the procedures, because when the real thing happens, Alex, you're going to forget your name. You're going to panic.
Yeah.
Man, I got stories. Look, I got a North County assistant principal who is really up on all the security measures. She had a real incident happen. What happened was, across the street, there was a guy who didn't like his mother's boyfriend. He picked up a gun. Now he's outside. He starts shooting the house up. Well, across the street is a school. So he's spraying and praying. And one of the bullets hits the school. They go into a lockdown, which is what they should have done. Okay. Right. They have done lockdown drills before. She had made sure they did them correctly. Every 3 months, she would do these drills. Now they have a real one. They do an after action report, which you always should do during a drill or during an event. They go in. She found out 1/3 of her teachers froze, did nothing. And that could happen. So that's why I say lockdown drills are the best thing to do. You go through the procedure. In my book, and I'm not on here to push the book. It's more, for me, it's about awareness and messaging. I've got these credit card size, little quick reference cards.
Nice.
Okay, in the book. All right. You can laminate them. On the cards, it just, from threatening weather, fire emergency, lockdown, because what's going to happen? You're going through all the stuff and you're panicking, going, oh, I forgot something. And it's just something you can quickly reference. And I found out I have a doctor friend who was in an emergency room. She goes, oh, yeah, we use those all the time. I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, they'll have like a code purple. She says, I forget what purple is. I got to look on the card. What the heck is it? I mean, you forget stuff.
You know. You're gonna panic.
So I try to make the drills. You don't have to do them every month, even though right. Back then I was an advocate. Oh, you do these every month. You're going to over drill. You're going to like, forget this. Every 3 months, at least every 3 months, do the drill. You're not going to traumatize these kids. You're not. They, most of the time, and it was sad to say, middle and high schoolers, you know, kind of think of it as a joke and, you know, had to be reprimanded by the SROs going, you got to take this stuff seriously. You got to be quiet. Right. You
know? But again, you're talking not about the drama class ones with the blanks and the shouting and all. You're talking about.
No.
Because there is a Georgia Tech study. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes that suggests that active shooter drills significantly do impact mental health. They said each school level, Daniel, to your point, faces unique challenges. Stress and anxiety are highest among high school communities in the 90 days following a drill, while depression levels remain consistent. But middle school students, parents, and teachers experience the greatest increase in depression, 55%, through stress and anxiety levels increase following drills as well. In elementary schools, there is some uptick as well. To your point. And that was the area where I was like, oh gosh, am I going to argue with Daniel? Because I think those very dramatic things are traumatizing kids unnecessarily. The thing I'm hearing from you in general is that there are no easy answers to this. No. I mean, it's a horrible situation we're in. But I certainly do. I'm a crisis communications specialist, okay? And I'm currently head of crisis communications at a higher ed institution, okay? And to your point about people can be the best trained people in the world, but a lot of them will freeze, because it's the fight or flight or freeze.
Right.
I remember a statistic from World War II, before they started training soldiers, there was a point where they realized that most soldiers didn't even fire their weapons because they were just too paralyzed. They were terrified and they had to really train that into them. Well, it's the same thing about drilling, this kind of stuff. And it's just unrealistic, in my opinion, sir, to expect, as you said, teachers who did not sign up for this to become drill instructors.
Right.
Am I voicing this correctly as far as what you're thinking?
Yeah, okay. No, absolutely. You are. Yeah. I get teachers usually after an incident and we'll have a meeting with these teachers and they'll come in and say, look, I'm scared. I didn't want to come to work today. Right. My husband said, you know, quit. This is not what I signed up for. But that's why in the book, I just want to give them, it's common sense. Just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Just keep it as simple as possible. This thing where you have to, you know, in your head, should I run? Should I stay? I don't know. Just stay in the lockdown. Again, remember, no shooter is locked through a locked door. It takes too long. They do not want it. They're not going to do that unless you're targeted. And that's a rare occurrence anyways. They're just looking for mass shootings or something where they have easy access. They're
point
not going to
lock the door. Is it point of least resistance? They're like, oh, that door's locked. Exactly. They'll go to the
next one. They have a clock in their head also. They know the cops are coming. So they want to get as many bodies as possible. It's all about numbers. So yeah, stay in a lockdown. It is the way to go. This other type of training, I know educators love it because they feel, oh, we're reactive. We get to do something.
Right.
No, you're going to hurt the kids. You're going to hurt yourself. And my whole thing is, and before every, at end of every podcast, you keep yourself safe first. Because I've had plenty of teachers who want to run out there and save their kids. No, keep yourself safe first. Then you can help others. Okay? Because otherwise, you're not going to help anybody. It's like in the airplane when the oxygen mask comes down. What do they tell you? You put your mask on first before you can save somebody else and your kid. Okay? Second thing is armed SROs. These people are expertly trained. They want to do this. They want to do this. They volunteer for this. They go through this intense training. Remember, they are not there to arrest you. They're not there to hassle you. They're there to protect you. They're an advocate between the administration, parents, and students. They're there to help you in an incident like this. So I absolutely support armed SROs in our schools.
Yeah. The book is The First 5 Minutes. Where do we get this? Usual Suspects, Amazon? Where do you want people to go get it?
On Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You could just, if you type in First 5 Minutes in Amazon, it should be like the first five or six things that come up. Again, I'm not here to sell the book. It is a common sense. It's only 77 pages. You can read it in an hour and a half. It's just going to give you the common sense stuff. implicit memory. You do something over and over again, just like when you put on a belt, tie a tie, and you'll get it. And you will be prepared. There's no reason to panic. You know what to do as a teacher, as a student. And again, parents, be aware. Find out what's happening in your schools. I know we're getting to the end of the school year, but find out, because normally what these schools do will wait until the last minute to do their last drill so they can get through. You know, their safety director say, oh, we got another drill before the end of the year. Find out how they're running these drills. And especially for kids just starting school, they're going to have a few more years to go. So find out what's going on and use your voice as an advocate saying, you know, you don't agree with, I don't agree with my child throwing things at a gunman or tackling him or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I had not really realized that. So I'm sure a lot of the listeners have it. Listeners, by the way, if you want to find Daniel Duluzneski, I'll have some links in the show notes for you. There's a Facebook page, there's a LinkedIn page. You can follow in there. And of course, a link to the book if you want to learn more. And the book, I believe, it's kind of a workbook, right, too?
It's a guidebook. It is a guide.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, check it out. And, you know, I hope at the very least meeting Daniel has opened your eyes and made you think a little bit more about it, because I actually don't know the tactics, the protection tactics my daughter's school is using, and I'm going to find out. I appreciate you doing that. Again, folks, Daniel Duluzneski is had a career in law enforcement spanning decades. He was with the U.S. Secret Service. He was a canine technician, and he had a pivotal position within the Pinellas County, Florida school systems emergency management structure. And Daniel, you are a powerhouse. You are a true believer, and your energy on this is amazing. So I just thank you, one, for all the where your heart is. You're just trying to protect these kids. And two, I thank you for sharing it with our audience here on Mysterious Goings On.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, Alex. As you know, I'm very passionate about this. It's something that I wish that, again, that more and more people were involved in this. Some of the experts that we do have in the industry, you know, you get vendors involved, so you do get some bad information. But again, I think schools, you stick with the lockdowns, you're going to be much better to do than dealing with this Alice training or run, hide, fight or options-based training. It'll be the way to go, and you'll be much safer for it.
Thank you, Daniel. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for joining us on Mysterious Goings On. Be sure to follow Mysterious Goings On wherever you get your podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget, you can get the links to books and other things mentioned on the show at mgopod.com. Until next time, keep reading.